Welcome to Brands Decoded Podcast, where we speak with some of the best founders crafting the next generation of brands. I'm Rahul from Times Internet, where we back consumer internet companies.
Hi, I'm Zoeb from Sauce VC that backs early stage consumer brands. We came together to build the Brands Decoded community, where members eat, drink, sleep, and craft brands.
And today we have with us a very special guest who has transformed the industry of eyewear and changed the perception around glasses and made them into a lifestyle accessory. We have with us Amit Chaudhary, the co-founder of Lenscon. It's great to have you here, Amit, on this podcast. Amit, Lenscon originally started selling glasses in the US from India. Wanted to ask you, what essentially changed that and how did the India focus came about?
Great. I think, Rahul, thanks. First of all, thanks for having me here. It's a privilege to be here and part of such an incredible platform. To answer your question, yes, we started in US 10 years back. I think a lot of stuff we do today is the learnings, what we got from there. You know, just to start with that, we can take return of a glasses, which was a concept there in US, but never heard of in a concept like India. Where you can actually return your glasses if you don't like it. But our US experience was such where we were just doing e-commerce business, right? We were almost like a marketplace where we were running a website, we're doing digital marketing to get consumers. And there were some merchants who were serving the consumers. And that is the first time we started realizing that the concept of D2C, what we tell today, that if you want to do any business, we want to be directly linked to the consumer, right? We should be responsible end to end for the product and the service which we are passing on to the consumer, right? And that is what the real D2C was. And we realized it very early in our lives that if you're not doing this, any business we do won't give us happiness, right? And we are not saying that we are perfect under the sun right now, but there's a lot to do. But still, we are happy that we know what to do, right? Most of the times when we are doing business, since a lot of it is dependent on third parties, you don't even know how you can command the entire end-to-end full stack. And that was our learning in US. While we were doing, sitting in India, we had some folks in US also. But we realized that the end-to-end connection was not happening. And that was not happening because we were not doing manufacturing. And what made us move to India was that, you know, if you are in a market and if we want to make a real impact, irrespective of the category, we need to own the full stack. And that can only happen when you own the product, people and processes, right? And that was that helped us, move to India, restart everything. And we were at a decent scale when we were doing in US. So I think that was more like a education for us, and then probably the best education we could have got at that moment about the category. But when we moved to India, it was very clear to us that we'll get the best of the things which are happening in the world to India and start the company, start the business in a way where customer and company are linked to each other. They're connecting the dot. It's not that we are just building the business for doing transactions.
Yeah, makes sense. By the way, just the idea of selling glasses online simply sounds outrageous. And it's definitely a business that requires a lot of customization. How did you guys come about it?
I think, that is a very interesting part because while you say these are all complexity, this also lands up into a blue ocean and not a red ocean, right? Because while everybody was just competing with each other, we were just trying to compete with ourselves and our problems. And of course, it was very unique, right? Even I would say when we were starting up in India in 2010, I think not entire world, if you see, there was not even a single company which has raised a private capital, right? A VC capital in this category, right? There were only few, one or two very large players which were just commanding the entire world. And they were probably 10% of the entire world's market and other 90% were all unorganized, right? So there is no absolute, real investment into making this organized. It was not happening. When we started doing is we started realizing that this category is exciting because first of all, it you know, the access was such scarcity in India. Like even today, for 1.3 billion people, we only have 30,000 optical shops. While in US, for 30 million population, you have almost 35,000-40,000 optical jobs. So that's the difference of just the access. That was the first thing. You know, we realized long back, almost like 25 crore people in India don't even have access. Forget about, you know, ki usko style kaisa aa raha hai, life, usko fashion kaisa aa raha hai, but they don't even have access to it. So that was our first proposition, that, you know, this is a big, big opportunity, and yeah, we need to own end to end to make sure that we are able to provide that access. The second was, of course, how people were perceiving this product, right? So right now, if you see between 2010 and 2020, this has suddenly become a lifestyle product. It's no longer a medical product. You know, it's not an optical product. It's something which tells my identity, which portrays my face to the world, right? And I need to be, and you know, between this and this, my identity changes, right? So this is what the core reality is, that how do we make sure that this product just not is solving one problem of giving vision, right? The core proposition is that it should look good on you. You should feel good about wearing it. You should not be taunted in your schools or colleges that somebody is wearing glasses. So if you see the difference, what probably, and we'll not pat our back completely for this, but we feel that we have influenced the country in a way where people have started realizing this as a lifestyle product. This is something they're proud of, like they're owning this with a lot of pride, which was not there earlier. Right, people used to not get married because of this, right? So we actually have removed that stigma out, and now you can see Bollywood actors wearing this in the entire movie.
Also wanted to chat about how you guys forayed into different verticals at one point of time, such as bags, jewelry, and more. And what got your focus back only to the eyewear category and discarded everything else?
I think focus, Rahul, and I know you know some bit of it because we spoke about this earlier, but while we were doing other categories also, our core focus was that can we build end-to-end full stack businesses in all the category. But we as founders were realizing, while we are also doing watches, also doing bags, and also doing jewelry and trying to own the full stack, you know, the full focus on owning a category by the founding team or you know, when teams were getting made in the top management, it was very important that we are solving a problem. To be very honest, we started realizing that we are not solving a big problem by doing watches or doing bags as such, or doing jewelry as such, because there it was already that mature to a level. But this is something which nobody was solving, right? There was no one solving this. We thought that, you know, this focus can help us. And we also realized that there was a lot of talk around market size and should we do more categories to increase our market size. But we listened to our heart, and if you're solving one problem in this category and it is impacting our consumers in a way, positive way, we were much happier at the end of the day. And that happiness plus the focus on building something one but great was helped us, you know, take that decision. It was very tough. Like even if you look back, it was extremely tough decision. It was almost like you're telling your babies to go away. But now we do realize, and there were a lot of mentors who helped us. Like Ronnie was one of the instrumental guys who helped us. They are saying that, you know, if he will only invest in us if we are focusing on one, because everybody was realizing that the passion which was coming, or the love of the product which was coming, was only in this.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So internally somewhere you knew that, you know, this is the perfect partner for you.
Fantastic.
And we stuck to that, and we firmly believed. Lot of I would say even our own people did not believe that like this could probably would have scaled this way. But I think that focus helped, and that focus was the key ingredients which we implemented in our business long back, and we were able to scale this business to this level, at least where we are right now, just by focus.
That's great. Also, when you launched in India, it was simply e-commerce, right? Basically go online, browse and buy. How did the whole idea of try at home come around?
So yes, it was all online. As you mentioned, we started in US, we moved to India. So all our learning at the age of 23, right? Everybody only thinks of doing business, which is new age. 2010-11 was such where we wanted to build a category only online. I think for the next 4 years, we only focused on building the business online. And, you know, continuously, there was one challenge which was coming up in our journey of scaling up the business was that customer did not knew their iPower, right? And in a very simple way, we realized that while we are solving all other aspects of the business, but while we talk about becoming a full stack, this is something as a service we also need to give and we cannot shy away from it. Right? We cannot tell somebody to go get your eye check from somewhere else while I will make your spectacle. So then that was, you know, while our brand was getting built, people knew us, but still that final transaction was not happening because people actually did not know their iPower. And that is the time we started realizing that what can we do different, right? It is just not opening retail stores at day zero, but even learning that entire experience. And that is the first time we, in 2013-14, we started realizing that can we actually send somebody to customers' home and see whether they can check their eyes there. So we started doing a lot of innovation there. And, you know, we paired up with a lot of innovation companies, innovative companies across the world who can build a simple gadget for us, which can do the iPower at customer home instead of, you know, somebody carrying. And we were carrying bulky machines to start with. But all that innovation helped. And we were, I think at the scale of it, we were at least doing 2,000 eye checkups a day while going to customer homes. And that gave us a tremendous learning saying that, you know, this is one piece which needs to be scaled, right? It is not something we can shy away. We have to believe that this is part of the game, right? You cannot just ignore this. Like it's correct. Almost like you need to be top of your fielding. Even if you have great batsmen and bowlers, you need to field well to win the cricket match, right? So it's exactly the realization then. And we started believing that, you know, eye checkup is something we need to forte. We got the best of the talent across the country. And that is where, you know, the first realization came that even if you want to scale the business beyond just the homes, even to retail locations, the service element need to be there. So it's a combination of service as well as product, but we just need to be there and make sure that this happens.
I believe certain technologies have now become popular. When somebody mentions first frame free or try at home or try out glasses virtually, I think they think of LensCart. So were you able to snatch the mindset of potential customers? Wanted to understand how you managed to do it. Also, considering this would have been really expensive, probably shooting up the CAC really high as well. Would love your thoughts.
Rahul, we were so confident of our product that, you know, we at one point we started realizing that the CAC of the, like getting a customer was way higher than the product cost itself, right? And freeze, of course, the second most famous word which starts with F, a four-letter word. So we started realizing that and we started this as an experiment. And I think that is the time we were just doing 100 orders a day. And the day we launched First Frame Free and we just were charging a minimal amount for the lenses so that there is no fraud. But our intention was that we believed in our product so much that we wanted consumers to try it. And with the belief that we know that they will come back. Right. And we just started a small experiment. We were 10x from the day we launched. In 3 days, we were 10x of what we were doing. Right. And of course, the customer acquisition cost in that was zero. We were just getting our products to everybody in the country. People who were even hesitant to try were now trying because that jump or the early adopters which were coming to us were now not, you know, hesitant to try because this is a difficult category to make one spectacles. You know, a customer has to first choose a frame give 6 inputs for left eye, 6 input for right eye, and fill all in all the values, then go through the payment process. When e-commerce was not that mature, we did not have the apps of the world. You know, people used 90% of transactions used to come from desktop, which means that they were in their office majorly to make a transaction. And in all of this, you know, if you're putting any blockage, you know, you're not giving your product to the consumer, because our brand is this, right? Our brand is sitting on consumers' heads, right? Unlike a t-shirt or a shoes now, which is, you cannot differentiate what brand is. This is something which is on your face.
Yeah.
Right. And somebody is wearing this almost 18 hours, 17 hours a day, right? Somebody who needs it. So this was very important that let people try, and we'll do anything possible to make them try.
Wow.
And that is coming from the first fundamental of access, right? If we are able to make them try, then we'll be able to scale the business positively. And very similarly, right, even the 3D try-on is same, right? If you're not able to make consumers try various looks, you know, they won't be able to, you know, choose the perfect pair for them.
Yeah.
So the idea was that our whole proposition was that can we make people try as much as possible? And that is the same thing we do today, even at our 700 stores. So if you go to a store, you know, you actually browse. If you go to a Lenskart store, you actually see an online experience into an offline world, right? Where you go, you browse the spectacles. You don't you know, choose what somebody else is telling you, right? Or some staff is telling you. You go browse the spectacles. You choose them. You add them to the cart. You try them in front of the mirror, and then you make the final transaction. And you, of course, go through the eye checkup in between. But the idea was that can you actually make your... Because the belief should be there, right? If I believe that my product is right, I should not be scared of making people try that.
True.
And we just went on and on. Ki ek hi aim tha life mein, ki India mein sabko try karana.
Fantastic. And wanted to ask you, how did you guys manufacture in the initial days? And how are you managing the SKUs? What was the number of SKUs you started with?
Very small. I think we were just 100 frames. And that time we were not manufacturing frames. But manufacturing as a process was with us from day one. And it was because what we were facing the problems in US, right? Because in US, we were not commanding the supply chain. So when we started business, our conference room became a manufacturing thing. It was a very small office. Our conference room, one conference room we had, that was converted into a manufacturing place. Our HR suddenly became the packaging person who was packaging packets. Our like every different guys were our developers, the coders were taking out printouts to put inside the packet. So I think when we started, we realized that if you're not doing manufacturing from day one, you will not own the consumer. We learned this from some bit of what we were doing in US, and we made sure we'll do this. Slowly, we were building in more and more automation. We moved to a more bigger facility while our orders were increasing. And I think 3 years down the line, we got one of the most finest robots in the world, which can make glasses. And I think I still distinctly remember we were 300 orders per day then. And we got this robot which can make 700 orders per day. And suddenly everybody in the organization wants their orders to go from 300 to 700 because this machine can make 700 a day, right? And we were, of course, doing all the manual manufacturing by then. But our desire to scale up while doing manufacturing suddenly increased. And everybody started knowing that this is possible. Because pehle kya hota tha, we were seeing that, you know, if we are able to do 300, if our capacity is 300, then we are only able to focus on getting 300 orders a day. But now when you know that you can actually serve 700, suddenly you will realize all your B plans, you know, you're surpassing your B plans because you know you can achieve it.
Yeah, a new benchmark got created for everyone.
Yeah. And not even benchmark, even the possibility. Now, you know, in stacks, if you just multiply by the number of robots, you can do as many. Now we have 30 robots and we are doing 20,000 glasses a day.
Yeah.
Because even opening offline stores at this pace was courtesy because you know you can serve it.
What would be your advice to the D2C founders who might be listening right now? Should manufacturing as a skill be within the core team, or is it okay to have contract manufacturers?
A, yes, the skill should be in the core team. B, I think the control, whether you're manufacturing yourself or you're getting somebody to manufacture, but you have to control the entire thing. If you're not able to control, even if a third party is doing it, you won't be able to manage this. But I think down the line, you know, if you're imagining your company 10 years, 15 years, have a timeline of owning that, right? Either you acquire that or you build something of your own, because that will be key to not only serve what you're doing right now, but also bring a lot of R&D and innovation. Like a lot of our frames, what we are able to innovate right now is based on the consumer feedback. So typically, if you see any eyewear business or any retail business as such, there will be one manufacturer, then it will come to a custom clearance forwarder, then it will come to a distributor, national distributor, then regional distributor, then somebody who is a salesperson going, then a retailer,
yeah,
right? So imagine the consumer who is talking to a retailer, how is that feedback going to the manufacturer? It is virtually impossible.
Yeah.
But when you're directly talking to the consumer all the time, there are a lot of feedbacks you can bring in. I remember one case where, you know, a 7-year-old girl was wearing her spectacles and she fell down and she got hurt and one of the screws, went inside her. I went and met, I remember Zoe. I'm still in touch with her. It's 5-year-old story. But Zoe was, while she was hurt, you know, we started realizing that this is a big problem and nobody could have given this feedback, right, ever. It's one in a million case will happen like this where this has happened. But what we realized courtesy that was, can we make screwless frames, right, for consumers where there won't be any screws? So any chance of even making the, that kid getting suffered by this spectacle won't be there in future. And this is now one of our highest sellers in the kids category, because wow, that is a proposition which came from a consumer to manufacturing.
Correct.
And there are so many stuff, right? We meet, the good part is in a D2C world, while you have manufacturing support in the background, when you listen to your consumer, you can tweak your manufacturing, you do your innovation there.
I'm going to shoot two questions together. First one, what was the moment when you guys decided to shift offline? And second is, what was the moment when you guys decided to franchise the stores? Because I want to understand, franchising didn't mean cutting the chain of listening to the consumers directly.
Okay, I'll answer both the questions. So first question, Rahul, was we opened a small kiosk in a mall in South Delhi. And it was a 60 square feet shop in 2014 in Select City Walk, Delhi. And we realized that there are almost 200 people standing outside our store. Wow. And that is the first time we realized that our brand is way stronger than we realize. And that was happening because we were doing a lot of stuff online. People were coming, they were seeing us, right? In online, the usual conversion for any e-commerce player, whatever good or bad they are, will be in the range of 2-4%.
Correct.
But what are the other 96 doing? What are the other 96 doing? And this is one question which used to, continuously bother us. You know, where are these other 96 going? Why did they even come? This is not a website to window shop. Then we started realizing that consumers want to try us, but they want two aspects. One is, of course, the service level, which I spoke about. The other is, just putting in the frame and getting the, feel of it, the touch and feel of it. And we started, opening few shops just to realize that what is the customer proposition. And our knowledge base, suddenly was 10x of what we were doing, because now you're not talking to the consumer on phone. You're actually seeing them, right? You're creating an experience for them. It is not something which is usual. But the good part was, since for the first 4-5 years, we were only doing online, our mind was working like that only, right? So our mind was that a consumer will come, he will browse, he will select. So we were trying to emulate the same thing in the offline world. And that was helping us to create the omni-channel, when omni-channel word nobody was speaking about, that can we actually use one channel to help the other channel,
okay,
and not create differences between the channel. That you typically talk to any retailer, for him, it will be an online channel, an offline channel, or a home channel in a different way, right? For us, it is all same. There is no price difference between channels. Everything is same. There is even the backend technology is all same. And while we realize that this is the potential, because consumers realize they are seeing it on mobile, they are shortlisting on mobile, coming to the offline store, doing the final test and making a transaction. That is where we saw this 4% conversion going up to 30% from the same consumer base. Now it was making sense. Because if you are reaching out a consumer, irrespective of the medium, you're reaching out to the consumer on Google, Facebook, television. At the end of the day, if you're reaching to 100 consumers, how many are coming and making a transaction with you and how many are making a repeat transaction with you is a real, real business metric any business would probably measure. For us, this 4% going to 30% was the biggest reason we started focusing on, offline store opening. So, a lot of people, even internally, was telling us that we should open stores where people are not buying online. We did ulta. We opened store where people were buying online. If we open stores where people are already buying online, is making our brand more and more stronger in that particular city, in that particular catchment, in the country. Yeah. And we just did that. For 4 years, we were just opening stores everywhere because we had the data of where to open.
Correct.
Because consumers were telling us that we like your product. There is a genuine interest here. Why don't you open a store here? Because I will also get an eye checkup service here. For us, we are currently at 700 stores. And out of that, 200 are franchisee, 500 are company-owned stores. When we started, it was majorly franchisee stores. But the core proposition was that franchisee stores were not, running the stores. It was the entire POS was ours. We were not selling the product, right? We were not selling the product to a franchisee and they were selling it to the consumer. We were owning the consumer. The consumer was still Lenskart consumer. So even if you're coming from online, going to a franchisee store or any other company store, you won't find any difference. And that is again a very core part. A lot of D2C founders do even ask me that, should they do a franchisee route or a company-owned route? Because company-owned route will of course require capital. My answer to them is do whatever the consumer should be yours. You should own the consumer. And then it is a financial game, right? That who is funding what for what profit. But the core is that are you owning the consumer or not?
Great. I also wanted to understand what was the role of tech in helping you take over the incumbents. You made several acquisitions in US, Israel, and how important role does tech play for the brand today?
We are techies at heart. Even every problem statement is a database query at the back end, which is giving out results as an answer for us. So we still believe that we are a tech company, which is running retail. I'm sure there will be some code word for this also in going for future where retail tech or something like that. But we are a technology company and we believe that technology is the only way to solve problems, right? And we have seen this when we launched 3D Try-On 4 years back, which people today say that it's augmented reality. The core proposition was that can we make the buying process easier for consumer? Can we make the entire experience more seamless? Today, while we are trying to automate every stuff possible, because if you're booking an order somewhere in Kochi, some store, automatically the robot starts manufacturing that order.
Yeah.
So all of that is gladly connected via cloud. But if you're not able to bring technology, we won't be able to scale up. Today at the age of 33, 34, 10 years back, I was 23, 24, like our founder said, our technology mindset was way aggressive than what we are today, right? And we need to realize it that these younger folks who are just in their early 20s are probably way, way smarter than in technology. So if anybody could disrupt us, will be those, early 20 year will come and disrupt us. And we probably have to also complement that skill set by adding those folks into our team and also get those talent across the world where, somebody is building that and ask them to help from a Lenskart perspective. We just invested in one of the companies in Chennai, Tango AI, which is just using artificial intelligence on CCTV cameras to make sure is your store operations run well or not. Right? It is like he never imagined a eyewear company would come and invest in that. Right? But we of course have to collaborate in a way where we feel that it could leverage not only us, right, but a lot of retail efficiency.
Correct.
Via technology.
For example,
we don't have any POS in our stores, by the way. We don't have any those billing counters in our store, because every human is a billing counter.
Correct.
If it is all online, they can actually swipe it from their phone or an iPad and can make the transaction then and there. Why do you need billing counters then?
That's amazing, Amit. Shifting focus a bit, I wanted to ask you, how did you get first investors to believe in LensCard? And how did you get that first check?
I think the first two or three did not believe in the idea. They believed in us. I have written this several times that it is the core equation of the founders which matters, and not the idea as such. Because you can pick up any idea if the founding team is very strongly knitted together. Kuch to kar loge, you'll do something out of it. I think if that belief for somebody who is putting in money into any organization is there, then they are not worried about the idea as such, because they believe that they are, there is no ego in between. There's no clashes in between. They firmly believe that this is possible, and they'll go their guts out. If everybody knew that this idea would be successful, then every VC would probably be 100x. Right? But we are lucky to be in a scenario where we were able to give some of our investors 100x of their investment. But the core proposition was, I agree, in the very early days for any startup or even Series A, Series B, it should be, just the belief that as founding team, the integrity, the enthusiasm, the passion should be there for what you are actually saying, and then it will happen. People will back you up. Rahul, you have been an investment manager yourself, right? And I think that is the core, at least at that stage. Rest, after that, wo market cap kya hai, and what is the Excel showing like, what is the cohort showing, all that will come. And of course, those are healthy metrics to measure, to even tweak your decisions. But till then, the first 3-4 years of existence is just believing in, and people will see your belief. You can't fake it.
Correct.
You can't make any fancy PPT to make it believe.
So Amit, I think we all remember that Jija Ji Wala ad from LensCard. How did LensCard position itself to promote opticals as a lifestyle accessory?
So even in that Jija Ji Wala ad, the person is changing the frames again and again to make sure he gets, that is the access I was talking about, the trials. So the core, and that is, of course, one of the ads which people still remember. It's a 6-year-old ad. But that aha moment was there. We scaled up well after that. That time we did not have any offline store, but still people talk about that. We have created multiple versions of that ad, because that is something ad which works all the time. But more than the ad, I think the concept was still the same. On a platform like LensCard, offline, online, or at home, you can try various frames and can choose the perfect pair for you. Uncle sitting, like in any other optical scenario across the world, there is an uncle who tells you that how sexy you can look, right? We are actually, we give that choice back to the consumer, that you should choose how sexy you want to look.
So being an inventory-led business, how is designing, procuring, and sourcing managed?
Thankfully, we don't have a product which can go waste. So we can have long-tail inventory. But it's a huge science there. Lot of customer feedbacks, lot of analytics there, lot of BI put in. We are not, I would say, not the best in the world like Zara's of the world or Uniqlo's of the world. But we are trending to be there in our category. But our products don't go out of fashion as such very, very quickly. Or there are people who can take that fashion even down the years. But yes, there's a lot of science involved in doing that. There's a whole, one of our co-founders, Neha, leads that area. And she does this with a lot of analytics. So I think data analytics plays a huge role there.
So the whole try and buy facility, did it lead to a lot of returns?
No, not really. I think very less. Returns would be down less than 2% there. And
wow.
Again, the same proposition like the first frame, free. If you're not able to make consumers try, how will they buy? it's very simple. So yeah. Even today, if you give me something which is a beautiful trial idea, we'll do that. Right, it is, we have to just make people try and they will buy. The core proposition is that we believe that the product is good.
Yeah.
Right. And we are working towards making it better and better every day. So, you know, if you're making a good food, right, you want people to try, right? Or log bolenge ki, haan, I like your food. So it's very similar, right? We want people to just try because we are putting so much effort in making the product right. It has to be tried. That is the only way we can succeed.
Amit, what opportunities do you still think exist in the eyewear space overall?
Huge. I think one is, of course, access. 30 crore people need glasses. They don't have access to it. Second is people, I think 90% of the people still own one glass, which is not defining their fashion. We have more shoes and we should have more glasses because while you're wearing one for the office, one for home, one for parties, you should have multiple. Third is, of course, while we are building in access across the country, we are trying to define this as a lifestyle category. I think in the next few years, we should have many, many stores across the country, tier 3, tier 4, going down to district level. We will propagate this and we'll also see, you know, ecosystem building. It's not just Lenskart who will do this, right? There will be ecosystem around local opticals, even other organized optical, which will come up and we all will truly redefine this. It is just not, you know, one or two players, or I just want the entire pie. Like, okay, Building this ecosystem for it.
Amit, when are we going to see the whole Terminator-like vision where they mix computer vision with the glasses? Is that going to be a reality very soon?
Yes, we are working on some bit of smart glasses, very early stages. I think the world is also researching a lot on this. We see a lot of worldwide top tech companies filing patents there. We are aware of that and focusing on it. Still, our proposition is a lot India focused, where people need basic vision. AI to aayega, but you know, if you go to one village and you make sure that everybody who needs glasses, you solve it, the efficiency of the village goes up by 50%.
Correct.
I'm not kidding.
Correct.
Imagine the impact of GDP this small product can have.
What was that one mistake you guys made? If possible to go back in time and correct it, you immediately would.
I think when we opened multiple carts, as you asked, it took us 3-4 years to realize that. If we would have probably focused more in the early stage, like we could have at least saved 2-3 years. So I think, but I think that learning at the early stage helped. We are very focused. We don't, even today, there is anybody comes up with any distractions, we say complete no, and we say that this is our focus. We fail harder and we learn from it. But yeah, if given a chance to roll back, we will not open more cards.
Thank you so much, Amit, for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us on the podcast. I'm sure our listeners have truly gained a lot of insights from your journey. Dear listeners, if you like this episode, do share it with others looking to learn more about consumer brands. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. We would absolutely love to hear your feedback and views. You can tweet it out to us at kcap_IN. See you next week with our next episode.